the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Writer and professional artist Terry Moyle lives in Kaiwaka. His art with partner Rosie Louise has an established presence in New Zealand and will be familiar to many listeners. Likewise, his books, which include poetry and five history books that focus on design and New Zealand social history. These elegant, beautifully illustrated hardback books cover important and neglected areas of New Zealand history. But while his recent books focus on New Zealand, his first non-fiction book was an international title. Art Deco Airports is a beautiful evocation of the architecture and passenger aeroplanes that defined the 1930s. The birth of civil aviation after World War I saw airports evolve from grass fields to decorated pavilions. With over 80 full-colour illustrations, the title quickly became regarded as a classic on the subject. The intention with Art Deco Airports was to create a book that would transport the armchair traveller to different countries at the height of the golden age of aviation. Reviewed by the Australian Financial Review, Art Deco Airports captures a time when visiting an airport was a glamorous event, covering airplanes, airports, and the pioneers of the day. The book is described as exquisitely illustrated and dreamy. The companion volume for Art Deco Airports was Art Deco New Zealand, an illustrated guide. This was not an architectural book per se, but intended as an accessible guide to many of the nation's commercial Art Deco and modern buildings from Kaitaia to Bluff. To research the book, Terry spent months using Google Earth to check out the streets of towns and cities in New Zealand looking for Art Deco buildings. The title sold out and went to a reprint. Terry's next book on New Zealand's first successful aeroplane flights completely revised the nearly 100-year-old story of the Walsh brothers and the flights of the Manurewa. The first, The Walsh Brothers and the Aeroplane Days of Edwardian New Zealand, yields a treasure trove of historic discoveries and correction. Reviewer Hayden Donnell in New Zealand Geographic magazine wrote, "The first is Moyle's attempt to untangle a cloudy history and dole out credit in the amount it's due. It draws together hundreds of disparate sources and wrenches them into a plausible history. The effort has won praise from aviation historian Richard Wow, who says the first is an impressive account." Terry then researched and wrote a history of electrical appliances in New Zealand, one of the best illustrated books of the year. To write Every Home Should Have One, Terry spent years collecting old appliances and photographing them on vintage carpets against vintage wallpaper. As with previous titles, Rose Louise created evocative illustrations, and the book remains the only book written on the subject to date. His most recent book, published in 2022, is a history of New Zealand's beach days, with a collection of contributions from New Zealanders calling their summer days in the 1960s and 1970s. David Hart in Canvas magazine describes New Zealand at the beach as a true social history, a story of the tribe and a time. Terry ranges widely without losing focus, moving from the detail to overall experience. David writes, It is filled with many images, illustrations created for the book, including vintage beach towels and reproductions of period advertisements that seem to contain the essence of the collective holiday experience. Hello, Terry.
Hello, Nancy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, well, it's really nice to have you. And we're dying to hear about these wonderful books that you've written and that Rosie has illustrated. So should we start off with Every Home Should Have One?
Every Home Should Have One, the client page in New Zealand.
Yes.
It's the start. It's not the first book I wrote, but it's very relevant to many people. Who've grown up in the grown up in the last century, I guess, would be the way I'd term it.
Sure. All those appliances, I mean, gosh, it's mind-bending. How did you obtain them?
Trade me.
Oh, really?
Trade me. Well, one of the problems with vintage electric appliances is that there are not many held in museums, and the museums hold them, specifically in Dunedin, that was just a bit too far for us to get images of. And we wanted to put the appliances in a context that people would recognise.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that involve? That involved scoping Trade Me, looking for old toasters, old electric heaters, and old television sets, old irons, and basically procuring them and then bringing them up to Kaiwaka, which is where I reside.
Sure.
And then doing the photographic shoots. And all the photography, well, most of the photography was done in the kitchen of our house, on the kitchen table.
Yes.
And we also acquired vintage carpets.
Gosh.
Old Axminster floral carpets.
I noticed that in the photographs. I thought, wow.
That's... Yes, they're all... it was the whole thing. We wanted to present them as authentically as possible.
Yes.
And the other thing that we did was acquire vintage wallpaper.
Yes.
This was pasted onto the kitchen wall.
Oh, gosh. How did Rosie take to that? She put up with it.
Oh, no, she was not keen. It's not something she went along with.
Mm-hmm.
But we put the... She was persuaded.
Yes.
And we would put the... One of the problems was, of course, wallpaper changes over time periods. So a wallpaper from the 1950s is not the same as wallpaper from the 1980s.
Of course.
So we had multiple rolls and multiple designs.
Mm-hmm.
And what we would do is just paste the new paper over the existing paper.
Oh, okay.
Change the carpet and then do a shoot relevant to the appliance. So we wound up with about six layers of wallpaper on the kitchen wall.
Gosh.
Which had all been removed. I was instructed to remove it, but it did hang around a bit afterwards.
So. Sure.
Yeah, so that was the idea. And we really wanted to produce illustrations that would transport the reader to the relevant time period. And, for example, we had heaters that were from the 1930s, through the 1980s. So there were a lot of...
Different heaters you had. I was amazed at how many, different brands you had there.
Well, they're all made in New Zealand. I mean, that's the emphasis that we had with the book. We wanted really a compilation of New Zealand-manufactured electrical appliances.
Mm-hmm.
Of course... these days, most electrical appliances are imported, and there's very little of any electrical appliance manufacturing going on in New Zealand.
Yeah, because so in the years that you were, from 1938 to 1988, there was sort of not much importing, was there? into, you know, of that type of thing into New Zealand. So is that right? Because
that's correct. Mm. It was very much a World War. Well, there were appliance manufacturing between the wars, but with the balance of payments crisis,
mm-hmm.
late 30s, there was great stimulation of New Zealand manufactured electrical appliances, and that's really where it sort of stems from. Although we do go right back to appliances in the 1900s and the first electrical appliance really to have an impact in New Zealand was electrical fan.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And, we were fortunate to be able to get some lovely vintage graphics from a catalogue in 1922 catalogue, and we've included those in the book.
Right.
And also looking at how the individuals who are involved in basically establishing the industry. So we went right back, and of course Henry Shacklock was featured, and
I remember those stoves well.
Well, the old ones, yeah. Well, they look pretty menacing, I must admit. I mean, the first electrical appliance sort of electric range, I suppose, dates from 1925, but Shacklock was familiar in Victorian times, coal-powered Shacklock stoves, and I'm sure they're still operating today.
And was he a Kiwi, and was he born in New Zealand?
No, he was not a Kiwi.
Oh, he wasn't.
John Shacklock was.
No.
Yeah, very much.
Okay.
And the Orion electric range was, as I said, 1925, and it was what originally had really electrical appliances are linked with electricity generation.
That's right.
So, after World War One, there was a great deal of pickup for electrical. What's that? Lighting primarily in many parts of New Zealand. Of course,
okay.
Some places didn't get electricity until the 1950s, I think. So, but originally it was street lighting.
Yes.
And of course, there were advantages with electricity, and there wasn't the mess and the business of having to clean out the stoves and.
Of course.
And
it was hard work too, keeping those sort of coal or wood stoves going, you know, and then the woman sort of baking and cooking on them. I mean, it was quite a lot of hard work.
It was. I mean, they were hard work. And, I mean, the electric stoves were marketed initially on the basis that this would be a wife saver, as it were.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, your wife would adore you if you purchased an electric stove. And there's a gentleman called Mr. Stark. Unfortunately, I can't quite recall his name. His name was E.E. Stark. Edgar Stark, his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an American engineer, and he was involved in electricity projects in Dunedin and Christchurch, and went on to become the head of the Christchurch Municipal Electricity Department.
Yes.
And he was quite an important figure in developing these appliances, and it can be credited to him, electric stove. So I've included quite a bit on Edgar Stark.
Okay.
In there, an American influence, I suppose, but he certainly played a big role, yes.
Yes. And what about all those vacuum cleaners? Loved by homeowners and loathed by pets, but yes. An essential appliance.
The vacuum cleaner, the vacuum cleaner. Most animals, I think, disappear when you start them up.
Exactly.
They've been imported cleaners. The Imperial Electric Vacuum Cleaner is one example. So they're imported primarily from the UK.
Sure.
And then Fisher & Paykel started manufacturing under license the designs. And in 1950, in fact, was the first, there's a vacuum cleaner called the Goblin Ace.
Oh, I remember those. They were a little bit, how can I put it, sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. Am I right, or were they okay?
It arrived in 1937, but by 1939, Hoovers were manufactured locally by Fisher and Paykel.
Okay.
So that's sort of vacuum cleaning, sorry, the manufacture of vacuum cleaners in New Zealand really dates from that time.
Mm-hmm.
1937. So you kind of, it's a mid-century phenomenon. I think prior to that it was hearth brushes and carpet sweepers. Which
Oh, right, yes.
Going back a fair way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the vacuum cleaners were are covered in the block. One of the problems with electrical appliances and writing about electrical appliances is there's such a range of them.
Yes.
We sort of take them for granted, but I mean,
we do.
Refrigerator, for example, which. You know, we kind of would say is an essential, and you know they got1931. I think you really would see a lot of interest in refrigerators and Fisher and Paykel.
Mm.
In 1934, in fact. Became the flag bearer for refrigerator.
Oh, as early as that, gosh.
Yeah, so it dates back. I mean, at the same time, of course, there were radio was a very dominant technology. And I did try and the difficulty with talking about radios is the vast range of them.
Yes.
Able to illustrate it.
Sure.
In the book. I mean, that's one of the problems with writing these kinds of books. You've only got so much space.
That's right. And there's so many different appliances.
Well, I was surprised.
To cover. It's amazing.
Oh, you like the cover, do you?
Oh, yes, I love the cover. Yes.
Well, that's that was quite an effort. I think there's a television set just for your listeners. There's the way we did the cover was we had the way it was to have an image of a house with window on it and illuminated at night. So in the illustration, we've got a woman with an ironing board looking at an old black and white TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave us the electrical aspect and the brightness of the interior. So
right.
That's the way we could sort of convey the idea of electricity.
Well, that's very interesting about all the appliances, but your other book, At the Beach, it's fabulous.
It's a beautiful book. It really is.
Some of and those beach towels and the recipes in it. It's fabulous.
And the baskets.
Yes.
Again, this is where you're dependent on what you can source, and we use Trade Me again.
Mm. Oh, really?
For example, there were vintage baskets.
Yes, that's amazing that there's coming up there. But it's great, isn't it?
It's a real resource if you're writing a book. I mean,
sure.
I mean, I guess the thing is, you still have to pay for the artifact.
Mm.
But I guess you could say, well, I can sell it later, I suppose.
So sure.
Element of cost recovery.
There'd be a few people collect them. Yeah.
Pardon me, sorry. We tried with the baskets to show sort of beach settings and recipes combined. So there was baskets with thermoses and I think one of the recipes here is cheesecakes.
Yes. Which,
and these aren't like they aren't like the cheesecakes we know today. They had raspberry and a sort of sponge topping on them. Absolutely wonderful to eat.
Oh, they were. And the banana cake.
Oh, cool. Well, we tried to do the, I suppose, classic beach recipes.
Sure.
And that was an aspect of the book that we really enjoyed. But it took a lot of work because we're up against the weather, so we actually had to do quite a bit of work in Photoshop and take out the background and insert suitable sunny images. And we featured footwear, jandals.
I know, the wonderful jandals, which we're still flopping around in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're sort of an essential part of New Zealand summer life.
Yes.
The thing with the book was also, of course, the amazing contribution I was able to secure from people in New Zealand from all walks of life, from different generations, but primarily from the 1960s and 1970s, and I was able to put their recollections of going to different beaches. So it's a very readable book, but also...
Oh, yes, and bring back, loads of memories for a lot of people.
We very much had that reaction, yes.
Mm,
and it's interesting because one of the things that you say, well, 1960s and 1970s, well, Kiwis used to go to the beach, of course, in the 1950s and before then, frequently. But what really happened in the 1960s, at the beginning of the decade, was the emergence of surfing films.
Ah, okay.
So the beach became a cool place to go. I mean, it was we always went to the beach, but it just became far more, I suppose, what's the word I'd look for? Far more trendy. I don't know if that word was used in 1960, but it certainly was the way we looked at that subject in that time frame. And of course, the end of the era, 1980s, Saturday trading came into being.
That's right.
Mm. So for 20 years, people generally in the weekend, if they were close enough, would go to the beach and have a good time and go there with the family. And wonderful. And of course, we had to put in illustrations for beaches right throughout New Zealand. So the book is, to the readers, it covers New Zealand as much as we could. And we've got some lovely, lovely vintage advertisements in there.
Which they're beautiful. And it's New Zealand life in that era, and it's so great to, have those memories. And in your book, you've brought them all back. I mean, it's a wonderful history of life in the 60s and 70s, really.
Very much. And I think David, who was reviewing the book, said it was a true social history, because I did very much try to get
people from different
backgrounds and get their recollections.
Yes.
And sadly, some of the people who contributed to the book, they are no longer out.
Okay.
And including my mother, who passed away earlier. Yeah. And I've got her featured in there with her recollections of going to the beach.
Oh, that's lovely. Mm.
Epic band and so on. Because my father was I grew up in a household. My father was a primary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant that we had extended holidays. One of the advantages of being in that profession. And he came from Gisborne, so we would drive all the way from Hamilton, which is where we were living, to Gisborne just about every Christmas.
Oh, that's quite a way.
It is a way, and it was really very much a feature of going to the beach. And one of the things I do concentrate on in the book is the actual business of getting to the beach and being there, because that was always part of it.
It was a big thing, packing up, getting the picnic ready.
Car sickness, that's covered in the book as well.
Oh, gosh.
All of those kinds of experiences we had driving. And, of course, the roads in those days maybe they are comparable today, but they did make demands on cars, the gravel roads.
Oh, they were gravel roads, most of them, weren't they?
Very much. Mm. And especially with up north where you'd...
Yes.
You'd have a lot more Granville Beach, and of course Coromandel as well.
Sure.
So we cover the mount specifically, and there's a extensive recollection, I think, of being at Mount Maunganui and being a surfy, so I didn't enjoy putting in there. And a gentleman called Henry helped out there.
Oh, really? Okay.
His recollections. I don't know if you, I think you know Henry.
Yes, I think I know Henry.
You know Henry.
Yes.
And it's called Surfing the Mount. And he was, it was wonderful because he lived in Rotorua when he was growing up. And he was able to provide a very lively account of what it was like to be, a young man in the early 60s, obsessed with surfing.
Yes.
And I'm very grateful for his contribution. It really was quite an important bit of social history that he...
Well, it was quite something, you know, at the Mount, wasn't it, a new year? And sometimes, some of those surfies and whatnot didn't behave very well, so...
Well, some of the surf... Well, as Henry said, you know, many of his colleagues and friends at that time, you know, they're not about anymore.
No.
So it was good. I was able to capture that.
Yes.
And, of course, that's the purpose of writing books. It's not... they have to be visually interesting, of course.
Yes.
But you've got to have history of substance, and I always try and get... first-hand accounts wherever I can.
Yeah.
So it does have some...
I know there are great days for that age, I think, because it was the era of rock and roll and Elvis, wasn't it?
Yes, very much. And I mean, Henry's account, what does he talk about? The best in New Zealand, he's talking about the Chicks and Ray Stevens.
Mm.
Talked about going to some of the Mount was the rave, and being close to the motor camp.
Yes.
Popular. So I can recall this. Don't You Know Yoko Ono by Dinah Lee was a favourite, and the Beatle hits.
Sure.
And he says, Henry says, I want to hold your hand was the start of many romances.
Mm.
There you go. Going to the beach and I suppose falling in love and whatever happened after that, I guess.
Yes, sure. Look, Terry, it's been wonderful. We are beginning to run out of time, I'm sorry. I mean, there's so much more. Well, we have just 24 minutes and I've only got 30 and I have to fit in your introduction and whatnot. So I think, unfortunately, we have to finish, but it's been wonderful talking to you and
likewise.
Your books are... Oh, they're just fabulous. Just a short question. Do you intend writing any more, or is there another one in the pipeline?
Well, we've done 6 books in the last 10 years.
Sure.
And they do take a lot of work. I mean,
the
book that
we haven't
mentioned is the first, which is the Walsh Brothers.
That's right, yes.
In New Zealand, which looks at the first aeroplane flights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is a really substantial history book that I could recommend to anyone.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure. There's so much more we could talk about, but I have to say goodbye now. And thank you so much for being on the program. And love to Rosie too.
Yes, yep, she's just out at the moment.
Okay.
Okay, look, thank you again, Nancy, and we'll talk again.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. We would like to thank our sponsor, Club Modern Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email clubmodern, MODERNE, auckland@gmail.com or contact Kay Coleman at 021 424 820. Bye for now.